and welcome to Midnight Harmony. I'm your host, E.W. Helmick. In the 1980s, the Ford Motor Company introduced the Lincoln Town Car. It was an automobile that was synonymous with the good life, a full-size luxury car targeted at people who preferred to be chauffeured. The idea behind the car was to introduce a luxurious car to the public that had a limo feel to it, but was more affordable for the working class. It brought with it a body-on-frame, full-size luxury sedan that was like driving your sofa down the street. If you were lucky enough to be a passenger, sitting in the back, you would indulge in the utmost comfort. The Lincoln Town Car was a vehicle of style and class. My father gave me his town car years ago, and after many years of enjoyment, I eventually passed it along to a friend in need of a car. To this day, when I see a town car, my interest is piqued, and my heart flutters with admiration for the beautiful ride. As you can imagine, I jumped at the opportunity when a friend of mine asked if I would like to take his Lincoln Town Car for a drive. I was like a teenager, giddy as I slipped onto the leather seats and sat behind the wheel. I started it up. The engine purred. The interior was clean and smelled of luxury. We drove a short distance when my friend asked if I would mind stopping so he could wish his son a happy birthday. I was driving, I was the chauffeur, so, of course, I obliged and we headed to where his son was. We passed a stone wall and gate and I turned the car around as my friend opened his door. I was content to stay in the car and play with the buttons and electric windows while my friend climbed out and went to see his son. The autumn evening was warm as the sun lingered over the horizon, shedding an orange glow over the landscape. Though I don't think I would ever tire of sitting in a Lincoln Town Car, I opened the large heavy door and stepped out to enjoy the evening. I watched as my friend talked with his son some distance away. Further off, a freight train crept across the edge of the cornfields, its horn blowing as it neared the tiny farming village where we lived. A moment later, my friend approached the car and we both climbed in and shut the doors. He was somber and quiet, and I felt he didn't want to talk, so I started the car and we drove in silence. Back at his house, he thanked me for the ride and I thanked him for the chance to drive his car. The autumn evening had drawn itself out, and I decided on my walk home to stroll again to where we had driven earlier. It was only about a 15-minute walk from where I had left my friend, so I filled my lungs with the warm, fragrant air and walked. When I neared where we had been parked, a breeze picked up, loosening the fragile yellow and red leaves from the trees that lined my pathway. The leaves fluttered to the ground as I passed the stone wall and stepped from the gravel road onto the lawn which stretched out before me. My friend's conversation with his son was not far from here, just at the end of where I now paused. Though other people were close, no one was interested in my arrival or purpose as I quietly strolled across the lawn. The conversation between father and son ran through my mind as I wondered what they talked about. Was it a refreshing conversation? A celebration on his son's birthday? I thought of my own sons and how much I loved them and how even at this moment I would have loved to have them close at my side. And then, without realizing it, I found myself standing in front of my friend's son. His name was Landon. I introduced myself as a friend of his father. He didn't bother to acknowledge my transparent comment, and I didn't bother to say anything else, for a lump had formed inside my throat, and I suddenly felt as though I might choke. My eyes couldn't make out the train on the horizon, its horn echoing across the landscape, for tears had filled my eyes and now ran freely down my cheeks. Landon was still. He wasn't bothered by my tears. In fact, he had grown accustomed to people visiting and crying as they stood before him. I don't think he thought it odd when I knelt at his side. I had seen his father do it, and I imagine others had too. Landon obliged as I extended my hand and put it on top of his small headstone that had been warm throughout the day in the sunshine. Landon died at the age of 1 from Leigh's syndrome, an inherited neurometabolic disorder that affects the central nervous system. The gray and black sunflowers that had been etched into the headstone seemed to reflect the deep orange that filled the sky as the sun sank low on the horizon. A coolness drifted into the cemetery. Suddenly, my eyes caught something else. There, at the base of the headstone, lay a small, polished pocket knife. The kind every boy has when he is at the age when his mother is inclined to take it away. But the father knows the magic of the first pocket knife. When courage, trust, and the first step of responsibility take hold in a young man's life as he fondles the knife and blades in the palm of his hand. It was clear to me now. This was a birthday present from his father. Though, this hadn't been a birthday jubilee celebrating Landon's birthday. This was an anniversary. An anniversary bathed in pain and tears. There was no laughter, carousels, balloons, or candles. For my friend, the afternoon had been a tearful occasion. An utter goodbye. An annual proclamation of mourning. A sorrowful apology of faultless guilt. "I'm sorry," escaped my lips. Why am I sorry? I thought to myself. Quick upon the tongue, my mind repeated, "I'm sorry for a life that ended much too soon, and for this death that went on to cause heartache and despair in the lives of those who suffered through it." My friend would never be the same. His family would never fully recover. And for that matter, neither would I. I arose to my feet. I shivered, unaware of the coolness that had overcome the darkening cemetery. "Goodbye, my friend," I whispered as I turned and left. Guilt now overcame me, a feeling as though I was abandoning this little guy, leaving him companionless, leaving him alone. I paused one last time and looked back. From the depths of the darkness, a still and quiet voice seemed to whisper to me, "There is more to this story." I acknowledged the words with a silent prayer as I continued onto the gravel road and out the gate of the cemetery. Landon, he was the first littlest angel. Thank you. The season of life that is rich with pearls and diamonds is that time when you find the one you love and you begin a life together. You have no money, you barely have a home, or are just beginning the makings of one. But no matter, a young couple spends little time in the home and an exceeding amount of time exploring, living, and adventuring. This particular couple was no different. They loved life, had been fortunate enough to travel the world, and now they were making a life as missionaries in Eastern Europe. Together, they were confident in all they did and brought encouragement and inspiration to everyone they met. Nothing was too big and no challenge too hard. Life was exciting, and days were filled with adventure. If you're older than 50, you remember this season and my telling of it. It's a breezy, happy time for most of us who have found a spouse that treasures what we treasure, that thrives on what thrills us, and is tender to the giving of ourselves and in return for love. The only thing that makes this season of life trivial is the next season, which is the announcement of a baby. It's a bit surreal. That moment you realize you have done something in love and fun that has now resulted in a new life. It's daunting. It's celebratory. It's, well, rather scary. As the idea of bringing a child into the world and raising them to adulthood begins to work its way out of your heart and into your cranial cavity, fear suddenly takes hold. Not a fear like, we wouldn't want it, but more a fear of, are we capable? The longer this couple sat on the idea, the more excited they got. They began making plans, telling family members, thinking of all the possibilities for names, planning vacations, considering education, and laying out special times that would be unique just for them and their new child. It goes without saying, it is a beautiful and anointed season in life. My wife and I were serving in the Pacific Islands when this young couple called to tell us that they had gone to the doctor for their 16-week ultrasound, giddy with excitement. They were passed from doctor to doctor, however, with the same result. The baby had no heartbeat. We stopped what we were doing and began a fervent prayer, asking God for a miracle. The young couple prayed too and continued to ask the doctors to keep checking, yet there was still no sign of life. Needless to say, doctors and hospitals in foreign countries are not always seasoned with cleanliness and compassion. They found an American doctor and he told them the baby would need to be removed the next day to avoid infection. Blinded by the news, the young couple walked through the halls of the overcrowded hospital, tears streaming down their face, shock overcoming their complete beings. The next day was a blur as they spent 14 grueling hours in the hospital only to be rushed in at the last minute for the procedure so the doctors could go home. Those taking care of the young woman were heartless and cold in the wake of tragedy as they removed the baby. Thousands of miles from family, a traumatic hospital experience, and the dreams they had for life with this little child dashed to pieces. The couple eventually went back to their apartment. The heat of the night was exhausting as I wrestled with sleep. Finally, I arose, went outside my small hut, and walked through the silent, dark village to the beach. The tide was out and the night was deathly still. There are no lights in the village where we stay, and so the night glimmered with millions of stars overhead, which were reflected on the ocean like a mirror of pearls. My heart broke as I wept for this couple. The glorious season of early marriage, the celebration of life, suddenly broken. I shouted to God, "Why is your world so broken, so dark, so blatantly ugly?" There was no answer, but I knew the answer. Satan was and is the prince of this world, and he would destroy, kill, and do everything in his power to flaunt ugliness and sorrow over anyone and everyone, and this couple was no exception. Certainly, they were not the first to have a miscarriage and lose a child, but they were the first that had been close to me, the first that was dear to my heart. Healing of the body and healing of the mind eventually take place, but the heart may never heal, I've come to realize. Some sorrow will forever be a part of us, and over time, I've come to see this. The young couple moved on, shared their story with friends and family, and eventually, sadly, life became normal again. Satan continued his destruction upon the world, and no one was spared when COVID struck worldwide. Having continued in the mission field in Eastern Europe, this young couple went into quarantine, and on the day they huddled together inside their small apartment, they found out they were expecting again. Quickly, the surreal sensation was upon them again, but this time with a bit more caution. It was daunting. It was celebratory. It was, however, scary. At 10.5 weeks, they went in for an appointment and again relived their worst nightmare. A second time. No heartbeat. "No, no, no," I cried when I heard the news. "God, are you utterly merciless?" I cried. As the young man relayed the story to me over the phone, my heart broke again and again for him and his wife. Because of COVID and virus-related restrictions, the woman had to go into the procedure alone while he sat in the parking lot in his car, devastated, heartbroken, angry with the brokenness of the world, unable to face tomorrow, alone. The moment husband and wife needed one another the most, they were apart. The seasons of life had turned bitterly cold and brought an arctic stillness to their hearts and to their minds. Each child was given a name. The first, Promise Pristine. The second, Kia. And together, Promise Pristine and Kia became the second and third littlest angels. Thank you. Oliver had long blonde hair that stood out like static electricity was forever pulling on it. He had pursed lips which somehow exaggerated his gentle smile, and his eyes were wide and deep. I never met Oliver, but heard of his story through a prayer chain. Less than 2 years old, Oliver had recently undergone surgery for congestive heart disease. He was in a nearby city where his parents were watching over him day by day. Moved by the story, I researched the family until I found them on Facebook and began reading their story. For an hour or more, hiding in my office, I read story after story of Oliver's courage, fight for life, and the incredibly inspiring resolve of his parents for him to live and his story to be told. A particular photo caught my attention. Oliver in bed, surrounded by surgical tubes, monitors, and life-saving equipment. But the real heart of the picture were his parents, standing over him, faces filled with smiles and delight for their little boy, their adorable child. From the first time I heard of Oliver, there were many exciting moments where his recovery and healing were none other than miraculous. His parents got to hold him, and at one point, praise went out for all the good things that were happening concerning Oliver. Dozens of communities, hundreds and even thousands of people were praying for Oliver. When my wife and I received the text that Oliver had died, we sat stunned by the news. Shocked, in fact. What had happened? What about all the good news we were hearing? On the Sunday following Oliver's death, the board of the church where I pastor had a scheduled meeting. The elders asked me to call the family and extend our condolences and invitation to use our church and facility if necessary. I called the mother and she answered straight away with a hushed, "Hello?" I told her my name and that the board wanted to express our sorrow for the loss of her son. My voice broke. I'm sorry, I said and paused a long moment. I could hear her crying on the other end of the line. If there is anything we can do, please, please call. She thanked me and we hung up the phone. And in the blink of a tearful eye and broken heart, Oliver became the fourth littlest angel. Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones. For I say unto you, that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father, which is in heaven. Matthew 18:10. In the text, that in heaven their angels, this word their is a reflexive pronoun of self. So in other words, their angels seems to imply that these little ones, these children who behold the face of my Father which is in heaven, are in fact angels themselves. When I was young, I saw a movie on television entitled The Littlest Angel. It starred my favorite child actor, Johnny Whitaker, whose equally talented sister would later become my entertainment manager. The story concerns a 4-year-old boy who arrives in heaven but is unable to adapt to the heavenly life. He cannot sing. He is always late for prayers, and his robe and halo are always dirty. The other angels are bothered by him, and he is miserable and lonely. Finally, he is introduced to an understanding angel who asks what he really wants. He asks for a box of childhood treasures that he kept under his bed on Earth. When the boy is on Earth again, he pauses to give his mother a hug, and as he does, she grimaces in pain because of the loss of her child. I won't tell you the rest of the story or the ending, but I will tell you of the immense sorrow I felt for the mother when her son gripped her tightly and hugged her before returning to heaven. I believe any mother that has lost a child will forever feel the pain in her belly, and her heart and her life will never again be complete until reunited. I was adopted when I was 6 months old. I was born on Valentine's Day. My wife and I wonder every year on Valentine's Day, what is my birth mother thinking? Is she grieved she gave me up? Is she sorry she had to give me up? I think of her often and wish I could tell her, I'm fine, and I'm so glad to be alive and where I am today. Don't be grieved. When I angrily shouted to God, why? Because of the loss of Landon, Promise, Kia, and Oliver, what I was really saying was, God, are you merciless? God sent his Son, Jesus Christ, to earth as a baby. He is anything but merciless. For upon the birth of the Savior, God showed his mercy upon mankind, so that we might live with him in eternity forever. It couldn't have been done without sacrifice. Sacrifice. Though each of the parents I've mentioned didn't sacrifice their children, they were asked to sacrifice. Some will call it sovereign, some will call it loss. And some cannot explain the devastation and pain with words, but it lives in them day in and day out, a hollow hug as their children's memories grip their very being. For me, I must turn my attention to the Father, to God the Father in whom these beautiful children are now entrusted, children who behold the face of their eternal Father, God and King. King David wept when his child was alive, but was facing death. While the child was yet alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who can tell whether God will be gracious to me, that the child may live? But now he is dead. Wherefore should I fast? Can I bring him back again? I shall go to him, but he shall not return to me. 2 Samuel 12:22-23. You must secure your hope and faith in God. We live in a broken world, and Satan has come to kill, steal, and destroy. But God has sent his Son to save the lost. Someone once said, the most astonishing and precious thing about motherhood is the brave way in which women consent to give birth to creatures who will one day die. Thus, the most astonishing and precious thing about God is that he gives us the hope that on a day, not too far from now, we will be reunited with these beautiful creatures, these children, angels, and we ourselves will find ourselves beholding our Father as it should be, in his care and his presence. Oh, the glorious day I will meet Landon, Promise Pristine, Kia, and Oliver, and they will recount their adventures and all things eternal. They are my inspiration, and though my hope is firmly in Christ, I know how much his love overflows for his children, and so it is in Oliver and the three littlest angels that I entrust my hope to. Godspeed. A blessed good night.